Blog Talk Radio.
Been running through me like you got somewhere to be. You're stuck in a full-time daydream. Always in a rush, I know you're busy for lunch. Taking pictures of your coffee.
Yes, we do. We all go running around and around and around. And now we're going to stop running around for a while, sit back and relax, and listen and enjoy the moment. Yes, this is our official band that provides all the music for Tippy Talk. He's Newborn. If you have not heard of them yet, you will, because they're on the brink of exploding into a world-renowned band. And if you want to hear more of the music, you can go to newbornband.com and enjoy the wonderful sounds. And now it's time to step into the Sippy Zone, where we explore the other side of reality, the side that allows you to reshape your life, to step into your power, and to connect to the fact that we are all one. Welcome to Tippy Talk. My name is Tippy Feldenstein, and I am dedicated to explore a life that is lived with clarity, confidence, control, and awareness. Tippy Talk is where you go from where you are to where you want to be.
Hello, everybody, and good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, depending on when you listen to it. We definitely wish you lots of good stuff. I'd like to welcome you into Tippy Talk, where today we are so delighted to introduce Rebecca Victor. I will tell you about her in a minute, but this is Tippy Feldenstein, and you are listening to Tippy Talk. Rebecca Victor is passionate about showing people how to create a sense of personal purpose. And if you're not sure what that means, it means to encourage people to live a life that is full of love and be present in your life and have a purpose so that you can shine and you can bring out your positive energy rather than any negative energy which is around. And we all know we have lots of negative energy these days. There are two main principles that Rebecca works with, and one is the importance of the word I, like I am or I will, and we will discuss that in detail, and also the principle of self-awareness, which is really the most important component of self-growth and self-empowerment. So I would like to welcome Rebecca to Tippy Talk, and thank you so much for joining us, Rebecca.
Well, thank you, Tippy, and thank you for welcoming me on your show. I'm grateful to be here with you.
We are definitely so excited that you are here today, because this planet needs a lot more positive energy, a lot more love, and a lot more empowerment. And each individual person that can bring a little bit of that, I believe, makes a huge difference, because each one of us has so much light and love that they can give. And when it's wasted on negative energy, it's just a bigger loss for the light. Mm-hmm. So there's nothing more important in life than that.
And I think it's important to recognize that there is a lot of light here on the planet. There are a lot of people doing wonderful things, but it's so easy to get focused on the negative for a lot of different reasons, that sometimes it's nice to pause and take time and recognize that there are wonderful people all around doing tremendous work, and to take time, at least within myself, to acknowledge that that is happening. that there are good things happening now. People like yourself creating this radio show, enabling opportunities for people to hear different people and learn what others are doing, taking that information, playing around with it for themselves. So,
that's exactly what I was going to say. That I was going to say, you're the proof that it does exist, and it does exist in abundance, and that we just need to focus into it. Definitely.
Great minds think alike, don't we?
and you know, there is a certain energy that you plug into, and then everything becomes synchronized and comes into you without you even having to work hard into getting it. And that's why we appreciate it so much more when someone like you comes along and says, oh yeah, it's there, and it's there in a lot of numbers, and we are winning. Because the light always wins over darkness, no matter what. And so all darkness. Go ahead.
No, really. You
mean to say something about darkness?
I was saying that statement. Darkness exists only because light's there, you know. So, anyway.
Oh, yeah, so yeah. It's the positive. Right. I mean, you can't have light without darkness. Absolutely. Yes. And so what I'm curious about, and something a little bit different than I've heard, and I have been really searching for the positive force ever since I remember myself. Maybe I was like 16 or 17 when I started looking. And there are still new things that I learn every day, and new approaches and a new way to express yourself. And you have actually something that I never really quite looked at the same way. So I think that's one little perspective that is going to change for me today, which is you talk about the importance of the word I. And I really want you to explain what you mean by that, because I and everybody loves to talk about I am and talk about themselves. But when you mean, what do you exactly mean by that?
There's a lot of, there's a depth as to what can be meant by using the word I. But when we look at I, we're basically looking at the fact that it's self-identification. And it's one of the most important statements we can recognize, you know, I am. And I learned about it through my own personal journey as I was evolving and moving through different therapeutic experiences and attending different groups. One of the things that we were taught was to let go of using you in conversations in relation to one another, especially when we were speaking about ourselves. And as I began to play with this word I for myself, I began to find a greater sense of empowerment as I spoke. When I speak from the word I, it's essential because what it does is allows me to know that I am owning what's coming out of my mouth. I am owning the words that I say. And in that ownership, I have the capacity and the ability in that simple line to say, I can change it then. If it's coming from me and I'm speaking it, because I've said it, I have the capacity to change it. Whereas when my conversations and just the simple use of that word by saying you, I'm placing over this responsibility to someone else. Not on an intentional level, because for most of us, we've been taught not to focus on I. It's selfish to focus on I. It's you know, you don't want to bolster yourself up or be the prominent one, at least in my rearing. And the recognition of how important stepping back and owning what's coming out of our mouths, especially in the work that I do when I have classes and I have students and we're really going in and talking very intimately about our own journeys, how important it is to claim that journey so that when we go to talk, we're not placing on someone else in a very subtle way what it is that we're thinking. Like, well, you know, you, and people use it all the time, you in conversation. And it's a very subtle way of giving away our power. Another thing it does, and this is one that was so helpful for me, especially being able to communicate when things were difficult to talk about, when we use the word I enables us, at least enables me, let me speak from that point of reference, it enables me to speak to someone in owning what I'm feeling and not putting the ownership of my feelings onto them. Thus, it creates from that person, there's no sense of a defense rising because I'm not blaming them for what's going on. I'm fully expressing it from my perspective. And so that's kind of like a rudimentary and very important component. Unless I speak with I lose my authority. I've given it away. So that's one element. So it's been very powerful.
Okay, so what I'm understanding here, and I think it's important because you can go from saying, I am God, which I'll tell you where I got that from,
yes,
to something a little bit more profound, like, for example, I happen to have people that work for my mother. She's very sick. And I have somebody that is constantly annoying. She does a relatively good job, but I want to tell her about the things that she doesn't do well. So you're saying rather than tell her, you don't do this well, why? What's wrong with you? I would tell her something like, I feel that perhaps this can be done in a better way. Like basically shift the conversation on how it makes, how about me, rather than you need to fix yourself, you're not doing things well, you're upsetting me, and say, no, I'm
that's
the
exactly
one that
right.
takes the responsibility. Is that what you really mean by that?
Because you got two different people. You know, I have a large family, and we can all look at one situation, and every one of us will see it differently. And for one to say, I think that you need to correct that, or you need to correct that, well, why do I need to correct it? You know, who's the one who's having the problem with it? Now, somebody might be having a problem watching somebody having a problem. But, you know, all of our journeys are so unique, and we're all walking ways that we truly don't understand. You know, there was a line said long ago, you know, from a Christian perspective of, you know, forgive them for they know not what they do. And that's said in many ways all over the world. And that in itself is so true. I mean, even when we look at what they're discovering from a scientific perspective of implicit bias, you know, there are underlying core beliefs that we have that we don't even know are playing are having an impact on what's going on in our lives. And so there are subtleties. You know, we don't even know, like when you talked about I am God, you know, there's not that awareness. There's a tremendous fear about that statement. It's almost as if it's a heresy because we're making this statement about I am God. Well, you know, when I look at, if I had to look at a tree, you know, what part of the tree is never a tree? You know, the trunk's the tree, the roots the tree, the branches are the tree, the flowers, the leaves are all a part of the tree. You know, and that doesn't cease to be because they take a different form from the trunk. You know, so I look at that concept of, you know, making that claim, you know, and recognizing within that the authority that we have to create the light that we desire, rather than to turn it over to what's happening in our world. You know, that's happening a big right now. People are frightened and fearful of all that's happening, and we give our attention to the thing that's frightening us only to build it, only to make it stronger because that's what our focus is. Instead of shifting back and remembering that, like, has the capacity to determine what we want to bring into the world and what we want to build and create. And that's where I love helping people turn back to and remember, you know, that, yes, I have as much authority to create in this world and create effectively than anyone else.
Yes, I wanted to say something, but before I say that, you said something really, really profound that I think needs to be said again. You said when you are afraid, when you experience the fear, you actually give more power to whatever it is that's making you afraid. And I think that's a really, right, if you focus on it, or if you're afraid, you're focusing on fear because that's where the fear is coming from. And by doing that, you're giving that more power. So if something happens or something you hear about that makes you afraid, you need to be aware of the fact that that fear, rather than the confidence and the trust and the faith that everything will be okay, is actually giving whatever it is that you're afraid of, it's giving it more power. So, you know, you said it really fast. I think it's really important to know that. But what I was going to tell you is that when I said to you before, I am God, it was a very uncomfortable thing for me to say. As soon as I said it, I was like, oh, God, that feels so uncomfortable. Because I was brought up in a very Orthodox, very God-oriented type of culture, where mm-hmm. saying something like that would be heresy, I think. And I don't think it would be taken very well within the religious world. It's like saying, you're not God. What are you talking about? God is the Almighty. You can't. But it felt, even now, it felt very uncomfortable. I don't think it's something I would say, even though I recognize that everything is God to me, because I do believe in God. Everything is God. But for mm-hmm. me to say that feels like I'm going over the top.
Mm-hmm. And so what you're doing then is finding alternate ways to make it palatable to you.
Right. Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right, because I don't want to be uncomfortable. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes, but yet there's something calling to say there's got to be something here to this line, because for some reason I'm drawn to it. You know, yeah, I agree with you. I mean, I know for myself, having, you know, it's like, whoa, when I first thought about that statement, let alone even voiced it, I was like, whoa,
right.
There was something inside that said, delve further, open up your mind, open up your heart, just open yourself up in meditation. And it was very interesting, because it's not claiming that by making that statement, I am all that is. It's kind of like saying, I'm not the whole tree. In one of my, in people who are learning oftentimes a new thought, one of the biggest examples used for teachers is the idea of the ocean, right? You have this massive ocean, and the ocean forms into a wave. Well, the wave is of itself the wave. It's the expression of the ocean as the wave, and it is the ocean. There's no place or no space within the wave that is not the ocean. However, it's not the totality of the ocean. But to deny what it is to deny the very thing that brings it life. And it's because of that. It's the force that breathes us. It's the force that thinks our thoughts. It's the force that beats our heart. And it's a very different way of thinking than from traditional perspectives. And it takes courage.
Well,
and oftentimes that courage comes because we're not happy where we are, and we need to figure out what's going on. So we're going to try anything.
There's a huge difference between saying I am God and saying I am a part of God, and God is
mm-hmm.
all. It's also a
mm-hmm.
little bit different, because when I say I am God, it is insinuating that I am all that is God.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? That
mm-hmm.
little subtle
mm-hmm.
difference is
mm-hmm.
huge. But,
mm-hmm.
What you say makes a lot of sense.
It just depends on
so.
If you see God as divisional. You know, if people claim God as that which is, and the only thing that is, that which became, everything that came from it had to come from that. So everything that is part of it and has as the very nature of its being and its very essence, that. And, you know, I'm not standing up and saying I'm the all that is, but it's the idea of...
Right.
That which I am. It's kind of like I can't claim I'm not the tree, you know, although I'm just a branch. You know, the very
right.
life force.
You can, so,
mm-hmm.
right.
But if you,
right.
yeah, but if
so,
somebody says I'm part of God, then great. If that feels easier and feels more palatable, that's the whole thing. It's each of us being true to what's happening within ourselves and honoring that. And not because I'm having a conversation with someone, I'm going to adjust it, you know, but being true to what, it's like, okay, what feels right for me, even though it might not feel right for anybody else in my life, you know. You know, so like you're saying, for me, a part of God, you know, saying I'm part of God, then that feels
mm-hmm.
more in alignment from you. That is that right?
Yes, it is.
Mm-hmm.
It also
yeah.
is a little bit more than that, because to me, the image that I get when I hear I am God, anybody say
mm-hmm.
that, is the
mm-hmm.
image of the first time I've heard someone saying that, and it was on the beach in Malibu with
mm-hmm.
Shirley MacLaine and my boyfriend were standing there, and she was writing the book out on the limb, and she had her arms
mm-hmm.
spread out. My boyfriend had his arms
mm-hmm.
spread out, and they were sitting there saying, I am God. And it felt uncomfortable for me then, so I stepped back and watched them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I've thought about it enough to say, maybe in itself, when you say your intention is not to be, to say you are the one and only, but it could lead to that by people misunderstanding you, because you see, you still had to explain it to me. But that's my progress reading now. So yeah, I get that. Absolutely.
But that's okay. I mean, that's okay. But I mean, you know, if somebody has the question, then I'll answer it. You know, but I think the part of my journey, at least for me, and I don't know about for you, Tiffany, is learning to trust the process of what I'm being called to, what I am, you know, and I can't explain that to anybody else. I can't make it make sense to anybody else. But if I can listen to what's happening in me and honor, then that's where I'm, that's where I think being in alignment is critical. Yeah.
Right. And I think
I can remember the first time I was introduced to it. You know, I had an older sister who was had been in metaphysics for a long period of time, and she was introducing concepts to me that I was just not ready for. And I can remember it was part of me that was intrigued. And it's like, you know, introducing a subject to someone who's not ready and trying to think that they need to be there, to me, is just disrespectful of their journey. And
absolutely,
and and everybody's journey is so unique and so incredible.
Right, and basically, like you said, respecting the fact that your journey might be different or is different for sure from anybody else, because it's your own unique journey.
Right.
So that's one really Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that's what's so fascinating about all this. That's what's so. Powerful, because it's kind of like one of the first images in one of my trainings we had to do is we had to let go of the word God, and we had to be willing to replace it with descriptors. And because oftentimes that word, just as any word we grew up, has certain emotional attachments to it and certain belief structures that we may not be aware of that we carry with a word. And so we had, we weren't allowed to use the word God. So I had to come up with different pictures and images. And it was really enlightening, because it really caused me to go, well, what is, you know, the light of my life? You know, and I began to come up with phrases that would describe what it meant to me, the source of my being. You know, and I use the word God, but I use all kinds of other descriptors as well that causes me to go, oh, this thing, this being, this essence, whatever it is somebody names it, how beautiful, because each person that tells me what they perceive introduces another piece of this quilt, this tapestry. You know, they bring their piece to it, and it makes something beautiful. It might be different than mine, but I'm not asking for it to be the same. But, you know, wow, because of it, it introduces me to another face of the eternal, you know, another face to that which is beyond my comprehension to understand it. But I'm
very interesting. Right, very, very interesting, because your intimate experience is uniquely your intimate experience. So everybody, so basically, it's, the other aspect of what you are passionate about and you do work with is self-awareness, which is what you touched on, your own awareness of your experience. So when you work with someone about that, when you focus on self-awareness, what do you exactly you mean by that?
Simply becoming aware of themselves, of their thoughts, of their feelings, of their body, of how they are experiencing whatever's going on. And also, not only just that, but the awareness that there's something more to who they are, just their activities. And when they create space to learn that, then that greater part of themselves, however they want to define it, however it looks, there's just that something more that becomes part of the equation and lends itself to just awareness of sometimes that if somebody's caught in a scenario and they're struggling, if they just take the time to quiet down and just get just quiet, and they have a practice of that, you know, sometimes it's like, well, I didn't do anything but fall asleep or whatever, but oftentimes in that process of getting quiet, they've just opened up enough space to allow for new ideas, new concepts, new thoughts to come through that might aid or assist them in responding to a given situation. Because when I have found in my journey that when I am concerned about something and I'm nervous about it or upset about it, I tend to want to grasp harder to it. I tend to turn more inward. I tend to turn, and the opportunities that are available in my ideas are limited because it's like it's got to look this way, or this way. And I see this not only in personal life but how I engage in business. The opportunities or the way I'm looking at it begin to narrow. But when I take a moment to get quiet, whether I'm walking in the woods or I'm just doing some yoga poses or I am sitting quietly or I'm listening to some music that allows me to calm down, it starts to create a space of openness. When I get up, all of a sudden an idea pops in that wasn't there before. Or all of a sudden I walk and I see it. And all things clicks in and something else starts to come that feels like it matches better than all of the other ideas I had that were being generated in response to the fear. So
I see.
For me, that's
so
self-awareness.
So when you're talking about self-awareness, you're talking about being able to slow down your thinking and become aware of it. Is that like a form of meditation?
Feeling. Meditation is an aspect of self-awareness, yes. Yeah. Meditation to me is a process for it. It's a means whereby I can become more aware of myself and then myself, which will...
Hello? You're kind of fading out, in and out.
I apologize. I'm not sure. Okay.
Yeah. Are you moving around or are you in one spot?
No. Well, I'm sitting here in one spot.
You're in one spot?
So let me.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, maybe
so it must be the wonderful service. But we're okay now. So,
you got it now?
You can repeat what you said. Yeah, if you can repeat what you said, because I think it was very important.
About self-awareness?
Yes.
I'm trying to remember exactly.
It was too inspired. Well, you were talking about meditation being one of the processes for self-awareness.
Yes.
But not necessarily the only.
Oh no.
Not necessarily.
Although it leads to quieting the mind. I think it's just quieting the external cues in our lives. And for myself and what I find, and again I'll speak that because I know that there are people like yourself, people listening. I cannot speak for them.
Mm-hmm.
So I speak to what it is that I understand and know. So when I am quieting my energy down, because if I'm in fear or if I'm trying to deal with it and a situation's arisen and I'm struggling with the situation in whatever area of my life, if I'm drawn to the... be very externally focused, all right? Because it's focused on what's happening, who's doing what, why they're doing it, how it looks, how it sounds, you know, what's gonna transpire, what people have told me needs to happen in order to be successful, or, you know, like there's only one way to be successful, and you've got to follow this track in order to be successful, or there are certain elements that are external to who I am. They came to me from something or someone else. I can spend my time and spin my wheels trying to take action according to what everybody else has told me. But if I don't pause long enough to get quiet and go, okay, what is that for me? What is it that when I think about it or resonate, or, you know, think about it or get quiet with it, resonates for me? But I can't ask that question or answer it unless I'm quiet enough to know who it is that is me. And there's various parts to that, too. But, you know, it's getting quiet and, for me, discovering. Because sometimes in the discovery of that, it is breathtaking. It is breathtaking in that quiet space. It is joyful in that quiet space. It is a space that's expansive. That's probably the biggest word for me, is expansive. And And then I come forth and I say, okay, here's this situation that before I entered into this quiet space, I saw as threatening. I saw as that which was going to cut me out from, you know, cut me out at the knees. Okay, so I'm like, no. Now, after coming out of it, there's the awareness that I have this opportunity or this opportunity. I can take this chance. I can look at this more. So instead of operating as a knee-jerk reaction, taking that quiet space allows me to put myself in the role of authority, the leader of my own being,
right.
and saying, what do I want
right.
to do with this? And when I have that practice on a daily basis, because I have my daily practice, it is powerful. It is powerful for me. It makes sometimes I'll work with children, and a lot of children are really experiencing very interesting dynamics with all this energy change. And it's just creating a space in the room where I'm with them to just appreciate them, to be present with them. So that's a way that I can use this gift. Or if I've got a friend that calls, rather than jump right into the fear with her, I can pause and sit back and let her talk. You know, because I know when I don't do my practice, wow, I'm right there. I'm in there. I'm in it. And the dukes are up. I'm ready to go fighting. I really say, oh,
yeah.
Especially with all this going on, it's amazing. I can see the shift in me. This is not how I want to live my life. I don't want to live it with my fists up. I don't want to be about that. I want to be about living the thing that matters to me in the way that matters to me. And the only way I can do that is to take the time in meditation, or contemplative reading is another way, you know, or going for a walk in nature. Nature is extremely powerful and soothing. So,
yeah, we don't realize how powerful it is to take a walk with any kind of nature, if it's a patch of grass or the ocean or the forest or whatever it is. It does help you in ways that you can't exactly identify all the time.
Yeah,
I think I realized it for me was when I didn't have it anymore. I used to live right next to a nice, beautiful mountain where I can get up in the morning, walk across the street, and take a walk in the mountain. But then when I moved and I didn't have it anymore, it became like something was missing that I was yearning to do. And I had to find another way to do it from wherever I was at. So I think while you do it, the effect is pretty profound, but you're not always aware of the effect that it has.
I agree.
Is that what you mean by self-awareness?
Yes.
Yeah. So your work is basically about helping, like showing people the way to self-awareness, to live a life centered on within. Did you have a turning point in your life where you said, this is what I want to do with my life?
Yes. I've, of course, it's just been one. I've known since I was very small that I was a teacher. But I knew that as much as I love children, I didn't want to necessarily teach academically, because I spent 13 years in four walls. And I'm like, no, I really want to explore beyond. But I knew that was a skill set I have to teach, to facilitate, to train, to help people explore within themselves what they're comfortable exploring, and based upon what they tell me. And I've known that. But I also didn't know how to bring that forth. And a lot of that came from just my own personal self-doubt. There was a tremendous amount of it. And as a result of that doubt and that questioning and that real strong sense of lack of self-worth, it led me to a place where I ended up choosing to enter into therapy and a program to help me discover what is happening within me. And it was through that process that I began to become aware of new tools and new techniques and new ways of engaging when owning my own power, my own authority, that led me to want to step forward. And so once my sons had grown and were out, it was like, okay, I can play with this concept. That's what I chose. A lot of people chose it at different times, but I chose it at that point. You know, knowing that there's more, and the hardest thing, at least in my journey, and I'm letting go of that as a belief, has been the idea that I'm introducing a concept in my teachings and the work that I do that isn't something that's tangible to me. As you know, it's just, in most of us in this culture or in the society put tremendous faith in the intellect and tremendous faith in what we can see and taste and touch and feel and hear. That when we're asked to explore the thing that doesn't respond to the five senses, it's frightening, at least for me, because one of the things I had to let go of is that I'm not a crazy person. You know, like when you talked about Shirley Quinlan and your boyfriend standing out there with their arms wide open, to embrace that concept, in embracing, when someone says that and they're really there, they know who they are. And it's not any sense of a usurping, or there's not a lack of awareness of the presence of the massiveness of God. But it's acknowledging that everything that they are is that. So it was fascinating to me to give myself permission, because, you know, I grew up where somebody would look at that and say, they're just flat out nuts. Something's really wrong with them. And, you know, and I can remember cousins who would try different faith practices and how it would just kind of rattle the feathers of my aunts or uncles. And I became aware of that. And so for me, there was some trepidation about allowing myself to be honest about what was happening. Now, I had an older sister who just flat out didn't care in that respect, and she followed that. And so I'm grateful for the gift that I received from her to pursue that and within myself, play with this concept than they actually admit to playing. And it's interesting when you start talking and people start sharing, but there's a hesitancy to share it because it's like, they'll think I'm weird, they'll think I'm nuts, they'll think I'm kind of out in outer space. And it takes tremendous courage to me and trust in this journey of learning to turn within. Because that's where, you know, what are we told in so many ancient practices all over the world? Turn within to find the presence of the one. You know, that's where it is.
Yes.
Whatever we name it, yes. However we relate to it. And so it's like, how do we create that? And then to trust when it doesn't have a physical counterpart. And
right.
And that's really even in the work we do when they talk about imagination. And the imagination is such an incredible tool. It is the primo tool that differentiates humanity from other creations, the ability to create, the ability from that creation to manifest. And, you know, science is discovering all kinds of, I mean, there's so much that's happening in the world of science and research. It's just a delight to see how spiritual understandings are coming to, are actually being, humanity can now see it, the equipment begin to understand so that they can bring and they bridge that gap between people needing something from the five sensory world to trusting that which they don't have rules for. So I, because all of a sudden I'm finding myself going.
No, it's beautiful. Beautiful.
There's a world of wonder for each of us in the degree that we are, that we feel safe to trust that. And sometimes I remember when I had a moment, I was really conflicted in my relationship with God, and I was angry, and I sat in my living room and just blasted God with both barrels. I mean, it just went on and on. I mean, it was angry, and I just, how could you? You are dead now, you know. And I mean, I just kind of spilled it all out, and then I sat in my chair in my corner, waiting to be struck by
Yeah.
And So I sat there and I realized there's a little voice that popped in and said, good, now you're ready. And I'm like, well, what was that? And where did that come from? And what does it mean? But I realized that, you know, it isn't the nature of the source of my life, but sometimes
yes.
open up to it being bigger, I'll never know that. And it's not to me open any other way. I can't open up like my spouse or my kids or my friends. I can open up like me. And
right.
And for me, that's what's essential. And it's different. For some people, you know, the need for structure is extremely important. And I would never want
right.
to minimize that, debase it. I would want to honor it, celebrate it, because that's where they find joy. That's where they find their sense of, and it's like, yay.
Right.
You know, so, you know, and I'm not necessarily, I have a sense of structure that's important, but it's different. So.
Right. It's a different kind of structure. That's what you mean.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But it's still structure. It's just a different kind of structure.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So what you're
and
talking,
our imagination.
Yeah, so what you're talking, and our imagination. So what you're talking about really is going from the third dimension, which is the physical reality that we see, into a dimension that goes beyond the tangible physical things that we actually touch, hear, taste, and smell. So when you go to that, I guess people would call that vibrational reality. Is that what vibrational reality is?
Well, you know, as I understand it, and I'm learning, everything is vibrational. Everything. And, you know, the scientists have identified it. It was with Einstein talking about everything being vibration. They're discovering it in studies. You can look up Noetic Sciences is one. I really enjoy heartmath.org. That's another one where they're exploring not only energy, but because they even know it in science, because that's why we have EKGs and EEGs, right? Because everything is electrically
right.
magnetic, the human body. Same with the earth.
Right.
And so with everything being vibrational, the thoughts that we hold, they're seeing, they can actually see literally them moving through the brain. And those thoughts themselves also have an energy pattern and a vibrational pattern as well. And with the body, I remember this gentleman explaining it, and I'm not quite sure if I'm going to explain it well, but it was enough that it caused me to pause and go, wow, was the idea if the body's magnetic and we have thoughts, then what's going to happen is that magnetism has energy and has a vibration that we're going to automatically start to attract the things to us that are aligned in that same energy pattern. There's a magnetism. There's a drawing so that if we're focused on life is terrible, and I've been there. You know, life is terrible. Oh, my gosh, I'm poor. I'll never amount to much. Our country's falling apart. You know, we are the result of people in authority. You know, all of a sudden, when we start festering in that, we're going to start to draw experiences that say, yep, 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 you're right. Yep, you're right. Yep, you're right. And we're going to see it. See here. So that's why two people can walk in a room on the same thing and be very grounded and have experiences that confirm what they're saying, even though what they're saying is diametrically opposed to one another. And
right.
it's like, then if that's the way, then how do I pause long enough to say, how do I use this power of my imagination, this gift, to help to cultivate a thought process and a mind pattern that allows me to move in and say, what do I want? Not what somebody else says I can have, what does not my life condition say I can have, but what is it that within me I desire? What do I want?
Mm-hmm.
What does it look like? And so as I play with this feeling, I begin to feel and begin to live within this idea that I am the thing that I desire, even though it's not yet physically unfolded. Instead, what happens is in that process, we start aligning. All of a sudden, I learn. It's like that game. Somebody said, you know, think about a yellow cab or think about a yellow beetle bug, you know, one of the VW bugs. You've never seen a yellow
right.
bug. I've never paid any attention to it, right? And he's talking through there.
Mm-hmm.
And that same concept of what starts to show up in our lives because we're looking for it. It starts to come. We become aware of it. The idea could be sitting there. It could have been laying right on our desk, and we're not even seeing it because we're not looking for it. We're looking for confirmation of how terrible life is. When there's this nice, wonderful little book or saying that if we would shift and say, maybe there is a possibility for my life that I haven't considered. And then all of a sudden, mm-hmm. with that simple statement, is an openness that creates this awareness that draws us to this book that's on the table now that we've seen. And so I think it's a combination, but I'm fascinated with what scientists are discussing in the realm of vibration and in the realm of the human heart and the human mind and how they work together and how we do impact one another. And that's another thing, too. Energetically, we do affect one another. And how do we take care of ourselves so that we can walk safe? And to me, that's where meditation also comes in. You know, I always kind of see myself in this beautiful white light and then kind of share that, send that out to others. People say, oh, that's kind of like hoity-toity or blow, or kind of out there. But if if I have a choice, why not? Mm. I mean, why not?
Mm-hmm.
Why not?
Exactly.
You know, why am I to go for the thing that somebody's criticizing and that's the way to do it? What makes that thought process, except this idea that we need to protect ourselves, and we think by paying attention to the person that's got the most latest and greatest and the negative is a way that if we look at it, we can protect ourselves. You know, which is, an ancient pattern, you know, that the brain has.
Right.
But yet, why not shift and open up to a possibility? Why not dare to be happy?
You said something now that is totally life-changing. You said, if I have a choice, why not? And I want to elaborate on that a little bit, because you're saying, if I have a choice, why not? But you do have a choice, then exactly why not? And the choice is to think either, oh, my God, it's raining today, it's so gloomy, I hate rainy days, or it's raining today, how can I find some joy in the rain, and what can I do to enjoy that? I may not enjoy walking in the rain, but I may enjoy sitting in front of a fireplace and watching the rain. So it's a whole different perspective on the exact same thing. So it's mm-hmm. not if I have a choice, why not? It's more like I do have a choice, why not choose blah, 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 whatever it is that you want to choose. Because a lot of people say, well, I have no choice because things are just horrible. I'm sick. I have this problem. I have this problem. I don't have any choice. I can't control it. And that's not true. The truth is, because you have a choice, then why not? Why not choose mm-hmm. that?
Right.
That's very, very powerful.
And yes, and I think, too, a lot of that comes with also being kind and gentle to ourselves, compassionate. And because I think mm-hmm. for many of us, at least I know for me, I really didn't have a clue at all the things that have been impacting me and continue to impact me. That I think that because I'm conscious of, you know, from my intellectual mind and from even that I'm conscious of it, that then somehow I'm aware of everything that I'm dealing with. But as I said mm-hmm. earlier, they are discovering implicit lie that we have no concept. We can't tap, we can't become aware, but they subtly affect how we engage and how we do it. Mm-hmm. And many people, when they come to earth, that they have this implicit bias, stuck because it's almost the antithesis of how they're engaging in life. And yet, mm-hmm. you know, this underlying belief keeps impacting them. And so, you know, I don't know about you, but I know that in my past and at this point, I'm learning to be kinder and gentler. I have been very hard on myself. I've been mm-hmm. myself. I have been mm-hmm. hurtful. And the expectations mm-hmm. I've had because of what I've thought around all that was painful and hurtful, and it's to be gentle and to be compassionate creates a space where I haven't walked this life before. This is new life for me, and even though yes, I've learned and I understand, there are still things and nuances that are present And understanding something doesn't mean that, I mean, I can know something intellectually, and that's one thing I learned. I remember looking at my therapist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In your mind, but your heart hasn't caught up. The rest of you hasn't caught up. And I'm like, oh. So it wasn't about my heart and my gut, my body, my soul, and it's like, okay. And so being compassionate in this journey creates the opportunity, I know at least for me, to be willing to take another chance when what I've done didn't work well the first time, or the second, or the third.
Right. Right. Right, because you have that option and you have that choice. That's what you're saying, and that's what's so beautiful about it. And so I'm having so much fun talking to you that I wasn't even paying attention that we are coming to the end of our time here. So I wanted you to tell us, if somebody wants more of you or to hear more of you, one of the ways they can get in touch with you is in the description below. I am putting a link to your Facebook and a few other links that we have. But tell us how they can, the best way to get in touch with you or hear more about what you do.
They're welcome to reach me. I think my number is down there as well, by phone at 937-672-0700. Or they're welcome to also email me at Rebecca@yourjoyfulpath.com. And my website, I've had my web designer. We're revamping that at this point. And so they're welcome to check out things that I've done there. And I'm going to be, I've got a class coming up. I have an 8-week class assisting individuals and taking that deeper dive within themselves. It's a small group. I'll have a maximum of 8 people just to provide for that intimacy. If they want to know more, they can reach out to me and I can share that with them.
That sounds really great. I think what you're doing is really wonderful. I think that really more people need to pass it forward. Even though you say that a lot of people are, I still want more. I want more and more. I want to see it everywhere I go.
And
I think you're right, because you attract what kind of energy you put out, so you might see it more around you, because that's what you're attracting, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
So so now
right.
You know how to reach out for... Right.
Yes.
Go ahead.
And like, you know, like when you're talking real quick. No, I apologize. Because talking about wanting to see it more. And I thought, you know, I think we do when we, like, if you've ever gone to a restaurant, and how you choose to engage with the server determines the experience. And, you know, there have been times I've gone in, and I've been a server myself in my life, and I've seen someone and they're exhausted, or they look, and my mind can go one way and choose to interpret one way, or I can pause and say, let me pause and look into the eyes of the server and just acknowledge, whether they're able to acknowledge it or not, just hello, good morning, it's nice to be here, thank you for serving us. And I find that it's kind of also what I bring to it. I like what you're bringing to this experience, your letters to me, you bring that to the experience, which is what I love to be. I love, you know, your letter was so affirming and celebratory that I'm grateful. It made it feel, I can't wait to connect with her on the radio. And so I thank you, because that's what you brought for me to this experience. And I think we bring it too. It's not just waiting to see it, but we get to bring it because we're looking for it.
Yeah, it's like you drew it out of me. Yeah, like you drew it out. Yeah, I may be who I am, but I don't send everyone the exact same energy that I would send you, because part of your energy is blending with my vibration, and this is what you're basically connecting to, that part.
Mm-hmm.
So it does make a difference. It makes a difference. And yeah, I did not know the server's perspective, and I think that's a really, really great example, because I always ignore the fact waitress was like a non-person. It's somebody that serves you in a restaurant, and then you're gone. But then my daughter went and became a server. And then she came home every day and told me about her experience, and it totally changed my perspective on that specific industry completely.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Amazing, isn't it? Isn't it amazing how just one shift of thought can just affect the whole way of seeing things?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It reminds me of, I don't know why you keep reminding me of Shirley MacLaine. That was like 1,000 years ago when I worked with her. But one of the things she did to get a perspective, she wanted to know what it felt like to be homeless. And so she went out on the street with nothing in her pocket and decided to live like a homeless person for a little while so she can come back and talk about what it's like to be homeless. Mm-hmm. So I don't think I would do that. I think it's a bit extreme for me. But but I can understand why you want to step into other people's shoes to see where they're coming from, so it expands your own reality of what is possible, as you said.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what's so nice is that we're going to each do that in our own way. You know, for Shirley MacLaine, that was the perfect way. And for others, that may, I don't know if it would be my way, but I really appreciate learning what she's got to share as a result of her experience. And what it drew from her.
Right.
Yeah.
Definitely
and I,
not
and I,
my way.
Yeah.
But,
yeah. But I enjoyed her
but
book.
What she learned. But what she what she learned from it is what I would want to know. I would want to read. But for me, I also realized that I didn't know this until I was close to 50, that I'm an empath and I can actually feel what other people feel just by them being in my vicinity. I had no idea that what was happening to me. And so I felt pain sometimes by someone being around. I'd be like, oh my God, what's wrong with this person? And it wasn't them, it was me feeling their pain. And it was a really difficult thing until I realized what it was.
Yeah. And then how to work with that. I think, learning how to me, that's so powerful, that gift that you have as an empath, and how to honor it, and also how to balance it. For me, it's like how do I balance that, so that this empath can be smacked pretty hard, do you feel that, do you experience
now that I became aware of it, exactly. Mm-hmm. Now that I'm aware of what it is, then it changes everything on how I can approach it with a cognitive mind rather than what is going on with me, what is wrong with this person, what is wrong with this person. it's very difficult when you have no idea what is going on and why you're all of a sudden feeling your heart beat so much faster than it would. You know what I mean? So it's really enlightening. Like you said, becoming self-aware changes everything. And I really appreciate everything that you do. I really, really enjoy doing this. I would really love to hear more from you. I will definitely be in touch, and I would definitely be listening into what you do. And this hour has been amazingly enlightening. And so thank you so much for joining us. Thank you so much for sharing all that beauty that you have. We wish everybody a wonderful experience. And I would say, dare yourself to live a happier life. If you can do that, then we want to hear about it. My special guest today, Rebecca Victor, has been enlightening for a whole hour. You guys know how to get in touch with her. I'd like to bid everybody a wonderful day, a wonderful evening, a wonderful night, wherever you are that you are listening to it at any point that you are. Please sit back and enjoy the music from our wonderful band. And until we meet again, enjoy your journey. Everything.
your life forever.